Hello, welcome to the photo show. Yes, we are going to do a photo show. I've been doing pretty well so far, haven't I? Yeah, I'll keep going as long as I possibly can. We've had a few weeks where we missed, but I'm going to keep going. Should be good. Now, don't forget, we've got a data colour competition running until the end of the month. So if you'd like to do that, you can win one of the Spider 10 Pros. All you got to do is subscribe to our YouTube channel, and from that YouTube channel, we will pick someone. It's either live, it's either britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and the channel that goes along with that on YouTube, or it's live, and I can't remember what it is. Live.britishtech or live, maybe I'll have to find out. But if you'd like to subscribe, then you can do it. I'll put it on a piece of text on the bottom here because I'm an idiot. I can't remember. So right there then, straight off with the news. First thing to realise, photo shows all over the world are cancelled. So the photography show went this month, 14th to 17th of March. That is not happening. It was last weekend. You all know because you didn't come. But the good news is there's a new date. Yes, if you would like to go to the photo show, then from the 19th to the 22nd of September here in Birmingham at the NEC 2020 this year, you will be able to go to the new photo show. Jolly good. Hopefully we'll be through all of this corona stuff by that point, and we'll have a great chance to get in, socialise. And if you come in, if you're in the BTN community and you come in, make sure you do pop in for a cup of tea with me. I probably won't be at the show because it's a bit boring, but come along and have a cup of tea, please. Now, Sigma has decided to focus all its energies onto mirrorless development. Not a big surprise, really, because the mirrorless market's really taking off. But to confirm it, Kazuto Yamaki, their CEO, sent out a tweet this week, and he said, "We are now focusing on our mirrorless lens line." Now, that doesn't mean to say that you can't buy DSLR stuff. What's this? Showing my age there, I think. Time for a beer. Old CB radio thing. Okay, 5x5. Right, got you. Will tickets still be valid? I would have thought so, actually, Magic Man. Yeah, probably. I can't see. If you've already bought a ticket, I can't see them denying you access to the show. But getting back to old Kazuto Yamaki, he said that they're going to go to the mirrorless lines. Now, you can still get all the DSLR stuff. They are not stopping production. They are only stopping the R&D into the DSLR line. So they're going to go towards all mirrorless from this point forwards. But as long as there's still sales there and production-led demand, then they will keep the DSLR lines going as well. BritishTechLive@gmail.com. That was the one. Thank you very much, Damo. SpaceX is running into a bit of trouble. Yeah, they're getting a lot of grief, and the Vera C. Rubin Observatory has sent out a report and a warning saying that private satellite systems are going to ruin the night sky for observatories and for photography enthusiasts, astrophotography enthusiasts alike. SpaceX are planning to release 42,000 small satellites into the sky over the coming years. To create a world internet, a Skynet. Well, that doesn't sound good, does it? Now, I might think of a better phrase than that. Signals from these are also creating a lot of noise for the CCD sensors that are in the the telescopes, that the observatories. If you look on a lot of the stuff that there is out there, if you Google this, you can see distinct trail lines across people's astrophotography, which is created by these satellites. Now, the first time it came out, Elon Musk was kind of get a life, and he got a bit of a pillorying for it, and it wasn't a good response. And he said, well, we'll adjust the orbit slightly so that they won't reflect, and they did, and they disappeared. But the new ones apparently are still showing a problem, so it could be a bit of an issue for you if you're into your astrophotography. I'm not. I just take the odd picture, but I know people do star trails and things like that. Ian Lewis does them, and it will screw that up for you, good and proper. Leica, my favourite company, is going to make sunglasses. Oh, yes. Will they be expensive? Probably. They've teamed up with Makita for a collaboration. Makita currently makes sunglasses, but I'm guessing that, you know, Leica are going to focus on the lenses part of it or not. And it's a logical progression, is it? I mean, you got Hoya make camera lenses and you know, filters and stuff like that, and they make lenses for glasses. Zeiss do the same. So it does make a logical step. There is a video online showing very little. There is a lot of essence of what could happen. They are talking about twofold of components in it, different makes and models and that kind of stuff. But actually, the video is a little bit pretentious, and you can see the prisoner picture there with Patrick McGoohany looking bloke. It's very, very silly. Will they be pricey? Oh, hell yeah. I'm sure they will, because it's Leica. Will they be any good? I'm sure they'll be beautifully made, but it's Leica. The next iPhone is going to have a 64 megapixel sensor in it. Now, if you're following the news, you know that Samsung's Galaxy S20 Ultra is supposed to be being released with 108 megapixels in it. Now, you're talking about a little tiny sensor that's half an inch across at best, maybe less. And they're talking about putting 108 megapixels in there. That means the sensor receptors are going to be so, so small. I don't know. I'll reserve judgment because I haven't seen any pictures, but that would ring alarm bells for me. And the fact that Apple are not trying to match them in terms of sensor size, they're sticking at 64 megapixels, I think would be a killer blow. I could also see this being complete bunkum and Apple just sticking at the 18 megapixel mark, 24 megapixel mark like that. Because it's an incredibly small sensor and they will be obsessed with quality over it. So we'll have to wait and see. The Sony sensors, though, are the ones that are going to be using, and Sony already make a sensor at 64 megapixels. So it stands to reason that it could be true and it could come in the iPhone, but nothing confirmed, obviously, until they stand up in September and say one way or the other. Do you like your Curiosity rover? Because I bloody do. I think it's one of the best things we've got. And every time we send a thing to Mars, I want to watch what goes on there. This picture behind me is absolutely immense. So for pretty much a whole week, over 4 days of intensive use at 6.5 hours a day, NASA got the Curiosity rover to shoot a complete 360 panorama of the Martian crater that it's in, the Gale crater. Now, that's not bad, because they were all going on holiday apparently, so they were shutting down the program and they set it up with this algorithm to go and carry on shooting, and it shot the entire thing. Now you can get this image if you'd like it from NASA. You can download it as a single image and it's massive, or you can get a 360 panorama of it that you can interactively scroll around as well to show you the inside of the Gale crater. This image will not be small on your hard drive though. It is 1.8 billion megapixels. 1.8 billion pixels, sorry. That is massive. That is enormous. But it is so cool. And the quality of it is superb. If you zoom in on it, it was shot with a zoom lens that was on the mast arm. And you can zoom in quite far on the picture and get some incredible detail. It does look absolutely amazing. Well done, NASA. I love that kind of stuff. Another rumor here. Canon 5DS and 5DR are going to stop production. Now you think, well, hang on, that's a bit quick. They only just came out. Yes, they've not been out that long, but they are going to stop production of them, supposedly, because Canon is going to diversify and go straight away from these into a 150 megapixel sensored camera that's going to be called the EOS R. This would be interesting because at 150 megapixels, yeah, it's fantastic. It's great. It's massive. Someone's obviously come over some idea of how to get really huge sensors. But I can't see why you'd want to go over 50. 50 to 64 is about it. The 150 one, the files are going to be enormous, especially if they're raw. I mean, I've already got 70 terabytes, 78 terabytes of storage in this office. Don't need it. Really don't need that. Great, but sorry, I don't see the point. I really don't. If you're going to get this thing and you're thinking, right, I'm not going to buy a 5DS or a 5DR, I'm going to hold off, then you're going to have to hold your breath for a while, because there's a big stock of the 5DS and 5DRs out there to get rid of before they start releasing this new one, the EOS R, if it's coming at all. There you go. That was the news. So now it's time for the gear. Tokina have revealed their lens roadmap for 2020. Now, C20 2020 was a show in Far East Asia that should have gone ahead. Obviously hasn't, for obvious reasons. And they would have revealed their plans there. So they've actually released a whole new line of stuff now that they're saying this is what's coming in the coming months. And you can see the picture there on them. It's good. There is a little crib sheet that you can go on. So they're releasing Nikon F-mount and Canon EF-mount in 11-16mm 2.8, 100mm with macro 2.8. And in the summer, they're going to drop an 11-22mm 2.8 as well in those fittings. Sony E-mount, a little bit less of a range, 23mm f1.4, 33mm f1.4 and 56mm f1.4. Fuji X-mount, they're going to drop 23, 33 and 56 again, so that's echoing that on the mirrorless front. There's a lot of the same tech going on there probably inside the barrels. And also on Sony E-mount, they're releasing an 85mm f1.8. Now that could be a cracking lens, that could be really, really good. And it'd be interesting to see what the price is on that. 35mm 1.8 and a 50mm 1.8. Again, those would be quite good. I think that the 35mm and the 50mm would be relatively cheap. 85 a little bit more in the couple of hundreds to 1,000. But we'll see. There's no prices and there's no dates on this because they're just clearly just saying, well, here, you know, here's all the stuff that we're about to throw out there. They say that the 85mm 1.8's on sale. I had a quick look around and I couldn't find one at all. So don't know what the pricing on that is. I'd be interested because that would be... That's fully autofocus as well with on video cameras. It would be really, really interesting. I do like the idea of that one. Leica, my favourite company, have released the 60 megapixel medium format camera. Now, this is the S3. Now, we talked about some stuff last year, or a couple of years ago, if you remember. And I said, you know, Leica make these little tiny pocket cameras that are ridiculous money, £4,000, £6,000 for a tiny pocket camera. And then they go and release a medium format camera at the £12,000 to £18,000 mark. And you're like, actually, that's really good value for what you're doing there. I don't know why you've got this obsession with the crazy priced small stuff. Well, if you look at this camera, it's really rather gorgeous. It's got a really nice small form factor. It's a small DSLR type looking thing. It comes with the focal plane shutter as well as a leaf shutter option on it as well, which is classic medium format. Interestingly as well, 64 megapixels, so it's not uber massive. It's just what you'd need. But one thing that's dead interesting, because normally you'll get 1:1 aspect ratio on medium format cameras. This is coming with a 3:2 aspect ratio, so that's a standard fitting of a 35mm frame camera, 3:2. So that's quite interesting, but it is medium format. I think this looks absolutely stunning. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous camera. Price, $19,000. So it's not stupid for a medium format camera. I just don't get Leica sometimes. Why are you selling the tiny, tiny stuff for enormous prices? And this stuff, which is good for, you know, not bargain basement, but a decent price, really decent. Come on, mate, sort it out. The next thing, you're going to love this lens. This is a 4.9mm lens that can actually see behind itself. Now, there's not a curvature of space thing going on here or anything like that. No, no, no. So this thing is an absolutely massive lens that you set your camera to, and it can see behind itself. Its field of view is 270 degrees. So it actually comes back on itself from where it's mounted. And you think, well, that's no good because I'm going to have my hand in shot the whole time if it's pointing backwards, or me in shot. You won't be in shot because this thing is absolutely enormous. I'm guessing that the lens is probably 2 or 3 feet across, 2 foot across maybe. It reminds me of a conical 360 mirror that I bought, Perfect Ellipse. And that thing was probably about this across, and it was a perfect parabola. And I bought it in the turn of the last century, 99, something like that. It cost me 10 grand. And I went out and did 360 photos, and I've actually got a PowerBook down here that's got the software inference stitch in it. And it's the same kind of size, I would guess, because if you look at the next picture is a camera mounted on it. So this thing's huge. So there's your Sony E-mount onto the bottom of this thing. It's the C4 Precision Optics 4.9mm f3.5 lens, and it is there to take full 360 panoramas of the whole world. Here's what the picture looks like when you've taken it, and there's a bit of software to unstitch it into a panorama that you can scroll around as well. Now, the interesting thing is that C4 Precision Optics was actually started in 2015 as an April Fool joke by the owner, Roger Kikala. But he then thought, well, this is ridiculous, because it was a rather popular April Fool's joke in a lens, and he's turned it into a viable enterprise. He makes this lens. You can buy one. If you'd like to rent it, it's $1,200 a week from a few places. But if you'd like to buy it outright, it's going to cost you $40,000. It is gorgeous. Look at that. I mean, that's a piece of sculpture, man. Absolute piece of sculpture with an AR-7 on the bottom of it. Love it. Will I be buying one? No. No. I like this. I like this a lot. And I like it a lot, not just because of what it does, but because actually the price point's not bad. This is an off-camera flash unit that is designed to work with either a DSLR or with your smartphone. It's really, really cool. This is from Filipino firm Innovatronics. They've created the CP Flash 550W. Now, it's a 550W because it's 550 watts of output. That's really powerful for a flash. That's not bad at all. It's all high-powered LEDs, 95,000 lux at half a meter, which is massive. It can do 100 flashes at full power. And if you take it down proportionally then, because you can set it from 0% up to 100%, you get proportional number of flashes in there, around the 300 mark for the average amount, up to sort of 50%. It's got different multi-modes, so it can strobe, or it can jitter, or it can do loads and loads of different things. And it works with an accompanying iPhone app. Oh, it comes with gels. There we go. So you've got coloured gels that will fit on it. They're magnetised and they slip on the front. And you've got head triggers and stuff like that for it. But the interesting thing is it comes with an app that's an accompanying app to go on your cell phone. So the cell phone will tie to it, and your cell phone will trigger the flash at up to 165 feet, which is really cool. But also you can open in the app and you can then adjust the power and all the settings remotely from your phone before you trigger it. And there's a couple of little examples here, which I really liked. So this is the first one, a picture at dusk without the flash, and then someone's put the flash in down where the girl is and triggered it off. And that's really bright. That is not bad at all. And then the same thing here, used as a little keying flash to just get the girl's hair to highlight. Really effective. I like it a lot. Price point? How much would you want to pay for that then? Have a think. $199 if you're talking about buying it on Shopify, or $219 if you want to get it on Amazon. I really like that. I could see me having one of those by the end of the year. Really impressed. Really, really impressed. And that's the gear. Time for your questions. Don't forget the Data Colour competition. If you would like to own a Data Colour calibrator, here it is. I'll just get it out for you. That's the one. It's a Spider 10 Pro. That could be yours if you'd like it. 150 quid's worth. I got two of these to give away, and they're absolutely stunning. It is the best screen calibrator I've ever used, and I've used nearly everything on the market at some point. And I'll never slip away from that. It's absolutely superb. And I've just spilled Coke down my front. There we go. Perfect. Just in time for the big show. Right. Get yourself subscribed to our YouTube channels and we'll pick a winner from them. First question is from Mark. There's quite a market for ND filters at the moment for the Mavic drones and that kind of thing to produce natural motion blur. But can this effect be created with software in post? Yes, it can. Is it any good? No, it's not. So basically what Mark's talking about there is if you shoot video, you'd like to shoot at a 50th of a second to get proper motion blur. And you're supposed to do 2x your ISO to your shutter speed. So 50th of a second on F25 looks absolutely, sorry, on F25, 50th of a second on your standard 25 frames a second will look really, really good. So it's absolutely perfect, but you'll get what's called motion blur in it. So if you see someone jumping, then they'll look really smooth. If you then let the thing do its own calculations and you let it run at 100th or something like that, or a 200th or a 1,000th of a second for your shutter speed, then it can look, because it's captured so much detail, it looks really jittery when it moves. The way to get around it, if you put it in, is to go into Final Cut and change the shutter speed via motion blur. So there'll be a blur setting there. There'll be a whole badge of blurs, Gaussian blur, that kind of stuff, directional blur, radial blur, and drag over the motion blur, drop it on. It just generally puts motion blur on it, and have a fiddle with the settings until you get something where it starts to smooth out. It's not going to look great. I'm not going to lie to you. It will not be amazing, but it will do it. So is it good? No, it's not. That's a really great price for the flashes, says Damo. Could they be synced as a pair? That would be really brilliant. Yeah, it would. That'd be awesome. There's one head, and the one head had got like the multiple, so you know, the four channel selectors on it. So if you've got two heads that are firing off, or maybe even 10 heads that are firing off at that channel selection, I don't see why not. It would be pretty good. Yeah. Magic Man said sync. Sorry. It is a good price for the flash though. Yeah, very good. Next question is three questions from Damien. He's in the chat room as well watching, so I've got to be careful now. Why do people like a Fuji camera so much, or is it just brand love? Yeah, I don't know that. So there's a guy called Stuart James here in Birmingham that I know really well. He's a good guy, really good photographer. He absolutely adores Fuji. And I think, is he a brand lover? He might be, I don't know, but I don't think so. He just loves it. I think maybe it's intuitive stuff. Maybe it does an awful lot for him in automation, which the other cameras don't. But he adores it. Why do people tend to love it? I don't know, but they do. Once they get into Fuji, they tend to stick there. It is quite interesting, yeah. I don't know the answer, mate. How is the iPhone compensating for light exposure? I've tried to copy an iPhone picture with my Canon D4, but often can't expose the right brightness in the sky and the dark foreground correctly. The iPhone does it, but it must be doing it at a loss of quality somewhere. Is this making sense? Yeah, it makes sense, mate, but you probably find that your iPhone's shooting HDR by default. And the HDR on the iPhone is actually pretty subtle. It's very, very well done. So I'd have a look and see if HDR's on. If you take the HDR off, then you might find the camera struggles an awful lot more. But have a try with that and see. But I guarantee your HDR setting is on. And that's probably what's doing the background, foreground compensation on it. All you got to do is bracket your exposure on your D4 and you'll get a similar effect if you want. You just mix the three images in post. Lightroom should have a facility to do that, actually, as bracketed images. What do you think about LUTs? Blimey, how long you got? So LUTs are lookup tables. So when you shoot video, you can apply a series of preset settings to it that will change it and give it a certain style or ambience. But you've got to be careful, because one of the things that people think LUTs do is color correct, and they don't. They take a starting point from a color correction and then they alter it to the standard LUT, but it doesn't color correct the original piece of footage. So if you shot off two cameras, then you'll have two different color profiles. You've got to color grade those together first before you can apply your LUT. And the LUT will then just give them a beautiful stereotype of soft exposure, or it's anything really where you just apply it blanketly and it puts the effect on that you want. Generally speaking, you can buy these things for Final Cut and for After Effects. They're not cheap. Someone's made them, and they usually sell them with a piece of footage which looks stunning, and it's not surprising because they probably wrote the LUT after using it to adjust that piece of footage so it's perfect for it. Does it mean your piece of footage is going to look gorgeous? No, it's not. And I've got to say, I've used LUTs, and providing I've done the color grading properly before we start, they look really, really fine. Good. They're okay. But if you just have a mess around with your exposure and color compensation and stuff like that, and make sure you make a note of what they are, you can make your own grade to go on to footage, and you can put it into the user-defined settings on Final Cut. And then every time you do two pieces of footage, drag it across. The one thing I will say is set your color profiles as close as you can and make sure you shoot on the same exposures. And that will give you a much better chance at getting the color grading right before you start applying your LUT. But I don't use LUTs. I probably never will use LUTs because I can do better myself, to be honest. Question from Tom. How best do you take pictures in the rain, keeping the lens dry and not wreck the camera? Don't worry about it or use something as a product to protect the camera and keep rain off the lens. I use a DSLR, a Canon. Good man for using a Canon. Well done, mate. So I've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of carrier bags that I've had. Purpose-built ones, off-brand ones to try and put over my cameras when I'm out on site working and it's peeing down with rain. And the best ones I've ever used are pieces of plastic that I found on the side of the railway that I've cut up with a pocket knife and then stretched around with a few bungees. And the other one is carrier bags. Carrier bags are excellent because you just pull them over the top of your camera, you get it nice and shielded really quickly, and then you just very carefully tear holes where you want to pull them around the lens or let the thing out to check the viewfinder and stuff like that. Generally speaking as well, though, I mean, I shoot in the rain because I absolutely have to, but the one thing you will find is that a lot of your pictures will go really, really grey because, A, you've got the diffusion of the light and it gets really, really dark as well. The colour starts to desaturate and you'll get, especially depending on your shutter speed, you could get like a grey wash across, which is the rain slowly falling and creating like a grey film. You'll never really get rid of that once that starts. So unless you're trying to show what it's like in the rain, you know, highlight the rain as a feature of your image, I just wait till it stops and then go out and shoot because you won't get a decent picture if you're trying to. I only shoot out there because I have to. I've got to. I'm in the rain and that's it. And they want the pictures of the job and the job doesn't stop. So, but you'll be fine. And the last question is from Magic Man. What is bulb? And can you what can you use it for? Okay, so you go around your dial and you've got the P, you've got the AV, and you've got the TS and all that kind of stuff for shutter priority and aperture priority. And then you get around to manual and you're kind of like, holy crap, I'm not sure I can use manual. Manual's dead easy. I spend most of my life in manual. Bulb is manual on steroids. So basically, you are with manual, you're setting your own exposures and settings for ISO, for everything, and shooting it off. And then you can sit and mess around and shoot it again and sit and mess around and shoot it again. Bulb is about doing the same kind of thing, but it's manual for a longer period of time. So basically, once you press the shutter, the shutter will open and expose the plate, and it will stay open until you press the shutter again, and then it will close. So you can have massively long exposures with that. Generally speaking, I think I'm going to say that the Canon stuff is restricted to 30 minutes because otherwise it starts to heat the sensor up too much and it shuts off. So if you go to astrophotography, they'll have a setting on bulb where they'll open it up and they'll leave it to run and they'll have cooling elements going around the sensor trying to stop it. But the bulb setting that I've used it for, shooting the ISS on bulb, crank it right down, open it up, put it on the path of the ISS, let it come across the frame, and you'll end up with a single arc as opposed to those little stuttery 30-second shots that no one ever joins together afterwards in post. The other thing you can do is stick yourself a massive ND filter on. So go and buy yourself an ND1000 or something like that, something that you use to shoot at the sun. Set it up in the high street and just expose it and leave it open for 5 minutes. Go out to a jetty or go out at night with an ND1000 filter on and leave it running all night and see what happens, or just keep opening the shutter and getting it all. Just do anything. Have a mess around, get creative with it. But bulb is about super long exposures. There is a photographer near here who shall remain nameless, who I went to his studio one day and he said, I can never get a really good picture of all the lights in here because if I switch the house lights on, then when it pops off, it blows it out and then vice versa. And I'm like, so have you shot it on bulb? What do you mean? So you sit and calculate the exposure with the flashes going off, what flash you want, and then you sit with a piece of paper and you work out how far you go in one direction, double, 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 to the point that you'll have something like a 5 second exposure. When you get a 5 second exposure, set your camera up for that, go into the complete darkness, open the camera, remotely trigger all the flashes, and then when the camera shuts down, you'll have a perfect exposure. And lo and behold, it worked. And that was all done on bulb. Just open it up for a long period of time. 1001, 1002, 1003, 1004, shut. And that's it. Doesn't have to be any better than that. It's like going back to the old plate cameras where you used to pull the cap off and count and then put it back on again. Yeah. That is bulb. Is the colour management different on the Fuji, says Damo? I couldn't tell you, mate. But the colour, so colour grading is about taking the two footages that you've got and using your eye to, on a calibrated monitor, using a standard, beautiful Spyder 10 Pro that you've won from us, and just saying, right, okay, do these two look identical? And when you've got them looking identical, then when you apply the LUT, then you'll get it. But how you grade the colour and what colour management options you've got on the Fuji, I have no clue, mate. You're just going to have to find that out for yourself. Read the bloody manual. What do I look like? Is it how they do the drawings with torches, says Magic Man? Maybe, but probably not, because you probably find that you can manually set an exposure up to 30 seconds anyway on a camera, and 30 seconds is good enough for stuff like torch pictures. When you're talking about using bulb, you're talking about exposures of greater than 30 seconds, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, half an hour potentially, something that's really, really long. There's a guy who does it in a high street, and he'll put down like a 1,000 ND filter on his lens and shoot. And by the time he's finished, it looks like there's no one in the high street because they've all just moved so fast that they haven't affected the plate. You just get like a grey wash across it. And there's a guy that used to do, he used to use 5 ISO film that he used to make himself, put it in the back of his camera, go down to a jetty or something like that, a lake, and open the camera on bulb and just leave it. And when it came back in the morning, you'd have a perfect jetty, the perfect layout of the lake and everything. But it would be just absolutely glass because the ripples had all gone over each other. The ripples were absolutely just flat. Beautiful pictures. Can't remember his name, but they were good. LOL RTFM, says Bob Peach. Don't know what that means. If you've got a question, send it to us at britishtechnetwork@gmail.com and I will try and answer it for you. I couldn't answer the love of Fuji. That's the first one that's actually stumped me, but there you go. I'll try. I'll do my best. With all the best intentions, we'll be back again next week with another photo show as normal. If you've got any stories, then do send them through because I do need help creating the doc. So please, please, please get the story sent in if you've got anything that you absolutely desperately want me to cover as a story and your questions. Have a great weekend. We're back with the big show at 8 p.m. Enjoy. See you then. Thanks for listening.